I'm a bit disappointed this week that we get to a situation where everyone's now in a position where we're going to be quite negative towards the umpires. I think we have to be really careful as an industry that we don't go down that path and we continue to respect and want our young people to get into umpiring. And I think we all play a role, whether that's players, coaches, administrators, media. I think we all play a role in making sure our industry thrives, and I think umpiring is one of those.
That's Premiership coach Simon Goodwin. I think that's a good message after the week that we have had. And it's the right time to have Ray Chamberlain in the studio. Hello to you.
Hey, Jared.
Feeling under siege?
Not personally, no. But no, there's been a bit of noise, but we're all involved in the largest sporting code in the country, so that's par and parcel of it all.
How does it leave you feeling? I'll give you an example, right? So about 6 or 7 years ago, there was a column written for a sports website that said there are no good sports broadcasters in Australia. None. Zero. Naught. Zilch. You know, oh, okay. I don't feel great about that for my profession. I don't think that's right. I could quibble here and there. I suspect you just don't like any of them, which is a totally different conversation. Your profession has been pilloried this week and pulled apart, and the view put forward that your brethren are ruining the game. How do you feel in a week like this?
It's there's cycles, and there are extrinsic and other factors at play that determine how much attention comes onto our group. And some of that will directly relate to our performance, being good, bad, or indifferent. So there's an element of that that where you need to own it. And then there's a significant amount of it that will be, well, were there any other big stories on the weekend or not? So that plays into it as well. I'll also say this. One of the great things about having been involved for so long is that you get to reflect on other times. And I remember coming through with umpires such as Matt Stevick and Brett Rosebery, Sean Ryan, Simon Meredith, Dean Margetts, Chris Donlan, Matthew Nichols. Now, those guys are all similar age, and we all came through the VFL together, right? All young punks. We had more hair there and all sorts of things, Jared. It was a great time. And I remember people at AFL level within umpiring were alarmed that Goldspink and McBurney and McLaren, Kennedy, Sheehan were going to leave. There are other names there too. And what's going to happen? And what happened was opportunity came for all those other guys that I referenced earlier. And it turns out that those guys umpired finals for 15 years and did grand finals and really moved umpiring forward. They were behind it, particularly the Roseberries and Ryans and those guys. The incredible change to enhance umpiring within the game. So people can lament what, and they've got, there's elements that's justified, elements, but there's great opportunity for those umpires who are getting opportunity on our list in-game at the moment. Because we're under the pump a bit. We've got lots of guys injured. It's not, that's unusual. And then, of course, like everyone in the community and the world, we've got COVID issues and other health-related issues. So we're a bit light on. So this is just a moment in time. But I think it's a great opportunity for our younger guys. Yeah.
Have you objected to any of the overalls that have been put forward? The crowds aren't going because of the umpires. The rules are too complicated and that's the AFL's fault. What we really need is ex-players to be the whistleblowers to give us a chance. Any of those that you go, oh, come on?
Probably the only one that I have a little that was a bit of a trigger pertained to match day attendance. I feel like there's some probably more significant parts of the pie that influence those things, and I think when we all breathe, we probably would agree. With the other issues that were raised, I don't agree with the 12 out of 10 rating that was put on them, you know, so things like, oh, we have to have ex-players and those sorts of things. But there is definitely parts of solution for the game more broadly and umpiring more broadly within those. So I try to breathe first,
yes,
and then pull it apart and go, what are people talking about here exactly? And get rid of the fluff and the flair for the clickbait and just think, hey, can this actually be applied? And there are some good ideas out there that and funnily enough, 99 out of 100 of them are being pursued currently within community and within the game.
is there merit? So in the not too distant future, you'll be a retired umpire.
Correct.
However long that is. For the next generation of umpiring, is there merit in trying to simplify the rules for the next generation of umpire?
So I think my personal view about the game is the rules are excellent as they stand. I feel like at times, potentially, we get in a position where we create some new rules, well-meaning, and with a clear outcome wanting to be achieved, when potentially, if explored, it already exists. It already exists. But the game, at times, I think, feels a little apologetic for implementing the laws of the game as they exist, more literally, and saying, this is how we're going to apply this, and we're not moving, and these are the reasons why. So there are some examples of that, and I don't want to get on my high horse yet, because my job at the moment is to actually follow instruction.
Yep.
Along with my 33 other senior listed umpires and the 16 rookies that we've got around the country who are doing an incredible job at the moment, those guys and girls. So grateful for everything they're bringing, Jared. And try our best to implement those consistently in accordance with the way we've been instructed. So, yeah, in the not too distant future, I'll probably have a bit more of a say around those things. But at the moment, I think the laws of the game aren't the issue. I think we've got some communication stuff to clarify some things. I think we've got some performance and implementation issues that go every week for every umpire, every player, every coach, every broadcaster. And yeah, we've just got to keep getting to work, put our shoulder to the wheel and keep digging in.
Would this be a week? So if I likened, so I feel like the umpires had a bad loss on the weekend. They're Essendon of a couple of weeks ago. That would be my interpretation. Is this a week for strong coaching? What does it look like as a cohort after a weekend that has drawn strong criticism?
Yeah, I'm a real believer about, I'm process orientated. Yeah. And I don't have to be super, super structured within an inch of my life. There's got to be some, there's lots of things going on in the world, Jared. But I just think that the difference between your best and your worst performances aren't around the 2 hours, actually. It's the week and the weeks and the months and the years of just great decisions around, am I going to do that extra piece of rehab? Will I watch that and unpack that decision, my running patterns, my teamwork, my understanding of the laws of the game, my skills, my physical training, all of those things that you make these decisions every day of every week, that's what adds up to determining the gap between your best performance and your worst. And I don't want to talk in cliches, but quite frankly, whatever brouhaha is happening out there in the world in terms of this serves no purpose for us on the weekend and none of my colleagues. You know, I could come in here and say to you, did you know that Bankwest, when assessing a person who has casual income, right, for 6 months or more, they will, even if it's their second job, Jared, they'll assess 100% of that income, including overtime and bonuses, when you apply for a home loan. It's a wonderful policy position that I utilised for a client yesterday.
Yep.
Oh, there's other things that we've got going on as well, which is really important, because what it allows us to do is not to get bogged down in all of this discussion that doesn't serve us. We need to get back to work, keep doing the things we do every week, train hard, review hard, be honest, grow and support one another. And when we do those things, we play our small role in the game really well. We serve the game well and we allow the players to do their thing, and then you get to do your thing. And the most important people, the fans, get to enjoy their thing. So that's what we'll do.
Ray Chamberlain in the studio. I'll work your calls in as we go. I've just got a couple more specifics before we do. Ray's mortgage tips segment in future. That's very good. And Adam texts through, new headline for tomorrow's paper. Waitley retires Dangerfield and Razor in a 15-minute block. I haven't meant to do that. All right. This is the Bart Cummings. You have too many flies in the stable. How many is the right number of flies? How many free kicks is too many? So we had the abnormal game of 63 on Sunday, and I'm just nerdy enough to go back and watch all 63. When you get a spike, have you been part of a game that's had a spike number where in the aftermath you go, oh, gee, we blew the whistle a lot there?
I can think of two. I remember, so I'm really lucky. I've umpired in like maybe six or seven Easter Monday games, and they're just the best, right? Hawthorn Geelong, it's just cracking. And two of us paid 27 free kicks each, and one umpire paid seven.
Right.
Which is extraordinary. Yeah. Right? You go, how does that happen, right? And it was, and so you go back and you review that. Like, I'm going, that's, wow, okay. It, honestly, and I was one of the umpires, and Simon Meredith was the other who paid a heap. I was assessed, I had three missed. I was meant to serve up 30. So I reference that because, of course, there are statistical anomalies in everything.
Yep.
Yeah? Now, in that game that you referenced, I'm certain, having watched, I watched three quarters of that game. Good game. What a fucking great game.
Yeah.
And there are some free kicks that didn't need to be paid, I'm sure. And then there will be some free kicks in that game that were missed that could have been paid, like every other game of football. So where our role is to be a witness, and then we can only respond to what transpires in front of us. So don't even reference that game. I'm just talking generally. And so you'll get games that are wet and contested, and by virtue of more tackle, more opportunity for in the back, holding the man, high tackle, holding the ball, incorrect disposal. So therefore your free kick numbers you would expect in a game like that are likely to be higher than a game that's kick catch. We're going to take the air out of it. Oh, no, we're not going long up the line. We'll hook it around the back again. They're games that are different in nature, and therefore you don't hear the whistle. You'll hear stand way more than you'll hear free kick so-and-so. So, look, umpires make mistakes, like players do, like coaches do, like everyone does. But I don't think there's a magic number, Jared. But there are statistical anomalies in everything.
Yeah. So I would, now, I don't know your 27 free kick game, okay?
Yep.
My observation out of Sunday would be there were free kicks paid that you could, if you wanted to, review and justify, but go in a normal game in normal circumstances, we're actually not paying that free kick. So I can tick you off on it and say that's okay and you should have paid three more, or I can go, do you know what, on a standard day, there's 11 of those that you don't normally pay. So where did we get to there? This game felt like that,
yeah,
to me. I think there are 13 errors, which takes it down to 50. And then I think there are 22 in the margins, of which two-thirds would typically get paid and a third wouldn't. And do you know what that would mean? That would land you at the 44 average.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a really interesting point. So when we feel – there's a gentleman that I love to talk philosophically. People are going to go, God, this bloke leads a boring life. I like to talk philosophically about umpiring with. So when I'm talking broadly about, okay, I go and I seek out Brian Sheehan, right? He's our Hall of Fame umpire. He's an assistant coach with us at the AFL. And when I just need to talk about this, so he umpired in the 1989 grand final, right? And Brian is a gun to have these discussions because he's seen such a broad range of philosophy from the AFL about how they want their umpires to umpire. And so we'll talk about these types of things. And the point you raise is really fair. There's this bell curve, right? Over here, that's definitely not a free kick. Over at this end, we all agree that's a free kick. Yep. And then there's this stuff in the middle, right? And that's where an umpire, and then as a collective, an umpiring group over a time, based on the instruction from above, that's where they create their brand. Yeah? Where do they sit? What do we expect from our umpires here? And that's where the debate lies. And it's super healthy. And you'll have a view. I'll have a view. Kingy's got a view.
Yep.
Turns out Kingy's got a view. Right, everyone's got a view because they're passionate about it and they love it and they're invested and it's super cool. Neither's right or wrong, but your point that you raise there about the subjectivity of our laws and the implementation of them, that's our game. You're yes. Spot on. And so determining what your brand is, are you strawberry or are you chocolate, right? Figuring that out's really important. So I agree with you philosophically about your observations.
Ray Chamberlain in the studio. I will work your calls in now. 1-300-736-736. This is Waitley for Red Energy. Moving house, call local energy retailer Red Energy and introducing Staria Load, the van that's huge on safety. Let's see what we can get through with Ray Chamberlain here. Alex is in Perth. Welcome to you, Alex.
Good morning, Jared and Ray. I've got a view about the laws, Ray, and it's seemingly different to yours. I think the laws are poorly written, and there's too much interpretation woven into the framework of the laws.
Now that's a reasonable position to take, Alex, because you're absolutely spot on in your assessment in that the laws of the game are subjective in their nature. So there's no disputing that. You know, we deal with metrics I've said before as reasonable time, prior opportunity, genuine attempt. They're all interpretational. They're not black and white in and out. So your statement is, I support that. It is absolutely subjective and interpretational in their nature. And that's actually the very essence of the game, as in 20 minutes plus time on. Some quarters go for 33 minutes, some go for 22. It's an oval ball that bounces in all sorts of directions. You can tackle a player from behind, the front, the side. There are 36 players on the ground at any given time. You get a point if you miss. So the game is subjective and fluid in its very nature, and that's at the core of the game.
Have you got a specific, Alex?
Yeah, I'd like to quote the ruck contest law that was up to 2016 was pretty straightforward. It's two lines, and it basically stated that you can't push, bump, block or hold your opponent. Otherwise, it would result in a free kick. But since 2016, the law has been updated, and it's gone to three quarters of a page, and now it talks in terms of field umpire will pay a free kick where there's unduly pushes or bumps the opposition ruck. And you say, unduly pushes, what's unduly?
Yeah, that's a great call. And, you know, at the heart of what we do is the preceding 2016 still stands. You can't do that. But what it's trying to encompass or illustrate, capture, is that, so what if two ruckmen came in together and they both push one another at the same time? Well, we can't pay a free kick there. So that's what it's trying to, I guess, capture the sense of. But that's a reasonable call, but the rules are still the same. You can't push, bump, block, hold, or make eye contact to an opponent in a ruck. So that they still stand.
Mark's on the Gold Coast. Welcome, Mark. I got you there,
yeah,
Mark.
Hello.
Yep, fire away.
Yep. Yeah, I love the show, love the segment, Ray and Jared. I always believe most answers to all football's problems can be found within the 1989 grand final. great style of game. Umpires paid free kicks and paid them quickly. There was 50 for the game in the 89 grand final. So on the weekend, 63, I think, in Hawthorn, Brisbane. But we all loved the game. The game flowed really quickly. The decisions, whether they were right or wrong, happened really quickly. And the end, everyone's talking about what a great game it was. I just kind of think that the volume of free kicks, I don't believe, is an issue. I think the one great thing we're not seeing is that rolling maul of tackle after tackle with no free kick, which I believe slows the game down.
Terrific, Mark. That belongs. So I have a mate who believes the answers to all of life's great questions is contained in Rocky III. So that is a perfect compendium to Mark's.
They're
belief.
Not a dissimilar watch, actually, the 89 grand final and Rocky III. Jared, as it turns out. Brian, when he gets up, so he umpired in that game, and if he ever wants to get a little laugh out of the group, he'll just run 3 minutes of his clips. And you know, you see a bloke come front on and T-bone a bloke in the head, no whistle, play on. And then you'll say, and I'm a Hall of Famer. That's what he'll say, right? So I think time's a wonderful thing too, Jared, in how we perceive certain things. Deep breath always helps.
Dangerous tackle, four dangerous tackles from the weekend. Robbo and I are in fierce disagreement. He thinks it's policy and dragging the game in a direction. I think they're errors. Can you settle our debate to any degree?
Yeah, without talking about specifics, I'm on your side of the fence on this one, Jared. Yeah, so there's look, the fundamental premise of dangerous tackle is about, and the players and the clubs, you know, we go out and they get information from the AFL, and then we go to clubland for training and answer questions. It's all around duty of care and protection of the head.
Specifically the head.
Yeah. So you can, it's a fierce game. These guys are so brave and they smash each other. And I umpire, and I'm, when I say these guys, I'm talking about AFLW. I'm talking about AFL. These are the competitions that I get to umpire in. The fierce contest of the ball is extraordinary, right? But so you're still allowed to do those things. But we look at things like head in a vulnerable position, excessive rotation, if the legs are lifted. Now, it doesn't have to get beyond the horizontal, but that type of look. If an arm or arms are pinned in the tackle, now all of a sudden you've executed a tackle by grabbing the wrist or the arms. Now you've got a little bit more duty of care associated, because that player, by that very nature of your tackle, can't defend or protect their head as you take them to the ground. So you're allowed to pin the arms. You're allowed to pin the hand. But if you do, and then you twist them and sling them into the ground, now all of a sudden that player's head's in a vulnerable position, and we've got an increased chance of an injury or a concussion. Okay, so that's the overall premise that we're trying to implement. We're protecting the head, and the tackler has a duty of care. You can tackle hard as you like. That's still fine. So that's the guts of it.
Yeah. And dissent is inconsistent. Like, there's no debate around that. One man's hands out is not another man's hands out.
Yeah. And as we've said, that's that the game. And when I say the game, I say the AFL. And they've said this. The game has set the agenda around it. And so now fans, media, players and umpires are being asked to come along and adapt. So we'll keep working it.
Bruno's in Geelong. Welcome, Bruno.
Yeah, good morning, Jerry. Good morning, Ray. Ray, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate hearing the umpire's view. It's obviously a necessary, important part of the game that you guys play. I actually love the modern game. I went to the 89 grand final and it was brutal, and I actually love the game at the moment. I love the 666 rule. But Ray, I want to ask you a question. What drew you to umpiring?
Well, first of all, thanks for the call and sharing that sentiment. I love the game now too. I remember the 89 grand final. 1989 was an amazing weekend in our life. The Canberra Raiders beat Balmain in overtime. Steve Jackson crashed over, and I'm from Canberra. And let me tell you, the milk, the green machine, we have never had a bigger weekend in our town. And that came the day after Hawthorn beat Geelong and Gary Ablett did what Gary Ablett did, etc. Massive weekend. I remember it like it was yesterday. What drew me? I played footy. I played for the mighty Tuggeranong Lions. I absolutely loved it. I played 250 games for my club. And I played at a time when guys like Aaron Hamill and Justin Blumfield and Craig Bolton, they played in my era and from Canberra. And no umpire turned up when I went to watch my younger brother play. So this isn't a new phenomenon, you know, and there was no umpire at the game. And the club president said, I'll fill your car up with petrol, Ray, and we won't let anyone slag you off if you do the game. So I went and got $20 off mum because she said she was paying for my petrol. That's Commerce Kids. And I umpired the game. And there was a gentleman there who saw me and he said, g'day. And he said, mate, you can earn six figures a year part-time doing this. And at the time, I was at college and I was working for Eagle Boys Pizza Delivery, Jared. And our bonus structure was how many garlic bread you could knock off in a shift.
Yes.
So six figures part time. Bob Stacey had my attention.
Very good. Bruno, that's a nice way in which to finish. Ray, thanks for coming in as ever. See you in a fortnight.
Absolutely, mate.
Ray Chamberlain in the studio taking your calls and the questions of the day. I'm indebted to him for doing that.